I don't like this business of preaching to fans.
Calm down, Greg. It's soccer. It's soccer.
You know anything else about soccer?
Not much. All I know is I got a lot of balls.
You know, it doesn't matter if you're in the stadium watching a game on TV. It's just the guy's not good enough. The guy is just not good enough.
Simon, I don't know if you're big into New Year's resolutions, but, you know, wondering if maybe you pledged to come out of your shell a little bit in 2015.
Kind of pisses me off, to be honest.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you're listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXMFC Channel 94. It's just that kind of day, Dave.
It is one of those
just
days.
Just that kind of day. Here with David Goss and Simon Borg. I'm surprised, Simon, you're not already jumping on me.
I walked into the studio today and Simon said to me, you know, every night I put Victoria to bed and she asks me, what are we doing here? Why are we living? And I had no answer for him. So I think we're all in that
mode. Do you have
today?
An answer
I didn't say
for Victoria?
I was in the mode. I didn't say that.
No, we weren't saying that. We weren't saying you. But normally you would have jumped on that. So maybe you're not quite in your rambunctious mood.
No, I let you drown alone.
He doesn't correct people.
Yeah, he's just
anymore.
Standing on the side of the pool with like the life vest. And
that's what happened to me. I was in. I went to camp. David, you've been to plenty of camps
camp.
In your life.
Yeah.
You guys.
Why wouldn't I?
I went to one day of camp. At 7 years old.
Really?
Because they just let me go in the pool, and I thought, I don't know what I was, what possessed me, that I thought I would.
You had
do
not
well.
Been able to swim before. This
I,
was your
I wasn't
first
a trainer,
experience
first
in a
experience.
Pool.
Aren't you from an island?
I wasn't born there. So at seven, I was still here in New York. So I throw myself in the pool, and it was a near-death experience.
Were you swallowing water?
It was
were
bad.
You were screaming. You were splashing around,
and no one reacted.
No one reacted. Yeah.
The next day, I just didn't go anymore.
Oh.
I learned one camp song.
What kind of camp was and what song was that? And what kind of camp was this? Before we move on,
it was.
You can't even remember.
It was like as you're walking down. G mom, I wanna go, but they don't let me go. G mom, I wanna go. It was that song.
Yeah,
that's
a pretty good
line.
And what was the camp? Was it like?
It was in the woods somewhere. I mean, it was.
Did you leave?
So
or was it a day camp?
It was one of those camps that you stay there all day.
So,
and then the bus brings you back.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Just a nightmare. Do not send your kids to camps, folks.
I actually am in agreement with that. I've worked at camps for a few years.
Really?
And I'm
people
not a
like
fan
David
of
are working camps. This is all you need to know.
No, I don't disagree at all.
Okay. Well, I had fun at camp, but that's neither here nor there. Big show for you today. Roger Espinoza is our guest of Sporting Kansas City. Of course, he's been with Wigan, both in the EPL and then the championship for the last couple seasons. Played in another World Cup. A lot of things going on with him. We'll chat with him here in this first segment. We'll also talk about that World Cup, the decision for Qatar. It's going to happen in the winter, and that's going to interfere with MLS playoffs way down the line. We'll think a little bit about how that might be dealt with by the suits over in New York City. And then we'll go to the mailbag, of course. Let's start first things first. On that Roger Espinoza topic, but I'm gonna throw it a different direction for you guys. Not about Roger, not about Sporting KC. We'll get to that in just a second. I'm gonna go a little more general, and let's look at these teams in MLS. It's 2 weeks, isn't it, until the first game? Like T-minus 2 weeks. It's getting here really closely. Teams are pretty much done tweaking their rosters, maybe a few signings here or there. So who's had the best offseason, and maybe more interestingly, who's had the worst? Who hasn't done enough?
So we're talking about acquisitions. Who's had the best offseason?
Yes, yes. So if you're looking at that transaction page at MLSsoccer.com, that is your that's your cheat sheet.
So top of the list easily is Dom Dwyer. He picked up Sidney LaRue on a permanent acquisition.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's not a team.
Simon had an eye roll there.
Yeah, he did. But you know what? Some news about Dom Dwyer. We didn't mention last time. Obviously engaged and then married Sidney LaRue.
It's a pretty good pickup.
Right, very good pickup. Then
think
Sidney,
about that strike force.
Sidney LaRue and Alex Morgan then went to 50 Shades of Grey. So that's bringing it full circle, Simon. You can maybe chat on the next show with them, exchange thoughts. Maybe, you know what?
Boy,
maybe
you guys
you
are
and
so
your
shy to say you went to see it. I mean, it's unbelievable. Second show in a row you bring it up.
So now going back to actual soccer, I have two teams on the top of my list, and they both revolve around one acquisition, New England and Vancouver. They both, I think, had a lot of pieces going into this year, and they both acquired strikers that I think are going to be star strikers, and I think they put everyone else where they have to be. So I think there are teams that have made more acquisitions, like Chicago and Columbus, that have been a large amount of quality acquisitions.
Toronto, the obvious one with just the money being spent up there.
Yeah, but they – yeah, okay. I guess that would have been a good one too, but I'm going with Vancouver and New England.
But to me, you're trying so hard not to pick the obvious. Toronto, what? Toronto is the winner, hands down. If you bring up anyone else, you don't know what you're talking about. They not only did they bring in two DPs, but they got Giovinco to come early.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and this was a team, by the way, that was a mid-table team. They weren't bad last year.
They collapsed down the stretch a little bit.
I don't know that it was a collapse.
Not a collapse,
I've seen collapses.
But they were,
that
sure,
wasn't a
but
collapse.
They were in a good position, and they squandered that position. How about that? Can you sign on for that?
Yeah, they squandered a decent position. So you have the two big names. Then you have two international players, obviously in Giroux and Perkis. And then you have a GA goalkeeper who's not going to count against the roster, and Alex Bono, who's already getting national team caps. And then you have guys who are going to eat up minutes in Marco Delgado, I think really highly of him, and Robbie Findlay. And then you get Dan Lovitz back after you lost him in expansion draft. To me, that's the obvious. They won the – you're trying to really reach with New England.
Which of those three teams is closest to winning an MLS Cup right now?
To me, it's an unknown commodity, but you'd have to say Toronto in terms of – we're talking starting 11.
You think Toronto over New England?
Starting 11?
Yeah, sure.
The one thing I will say about New England, and I love their team, and I think that they're probably the favorites right now, maybe them or FC Dallas, because there are some injuries, but Jermaine Jones is not going to be there from the very start. I know. Simon said it on another show. Beginning of the season doesn't matter. I don't know that I agree with that.
No, but Josie Altidore and Michael Bradley are going to miss for Gold Cup. You're going to have players
true.
In and out. The reality of it is Juan Agudelo was the best player on a team that went to the Eastern Conference Finals for New England. They then lost him. They went to the final, and now they're getting him back at the age of 22.
With Jermaine Jones as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I could see that. I'm with Simon. I think it's Toronto FC. Look, they knew they had to go in and do big things. They knew they were going for the playoffs. I think they'll make it there. I'm with Simon here. I don't think the Gold Cup ultimately will matter that much. They will drop some points during that period. But you still have Giovinco. You still have the rest of that roster. I think they'll make the playoffs and make a little bit of noise. But now the team that didn't do enough. Because that's maybe the one that the team that the fan is at home thinking, man, I don't know. We had holes, but we didn't fill them. And this is actually, for me, the much harder one. Because you look through these lists, most teams made a good number of moves. You have the Sounders that stood pat, but you understand that based on their roster. The one team that I would look at that I maybe still have an issue with, even though they made some great moves, is the Red Bulls. I just don't – that center back pairing, who is it, and are they going to be any good? Great. You have a great midfield. You got BWP. You got Lloyd Sam. But what happens in the back? That's my biggest question right now. And I know Jesse Marsh is going to be a guy who gets them organized, but you still have to have the players. So right now, they're the ones that I have the biggest question marks about. It was Real Salt Lake, though, because I didn't know what was going on with them either. But, you know, you have Luis Gil to walk in for Grabovoi. You bring in DeMar Phillips to walk in for Wingert. Hummus and Olave for Borchers. I mean, it's kind of a like for like on the age scale. And you know you're not going to get a ton of time out of them. But there's nobody that really stands out to me that just kind of dropped the ball.
I mean, to me, Seattle, you say they stood pat, and that's fine, but you look at them and say they lost Jimmy Traore, they lost Jahlil Anibaba, they lost DeAndre Yedlin in the back line. And the back line was the place where you can look at Seattle and say, you know what, I'm not that confident
with what
they have. And Zach Scott's a year older. I mean –
Brad Evans they're saying he's probably going to move to center back, or at least those are the preseason rumblings.
I mean, that's what you're doing? You're moving Brad Evans to center back?
Yeah, that does seem like a stopgap.
So to me, if I'm a Seattle fan, again, having Dempsey and
Oba
up front really, you know, I think masks things, but I think you wanted to do better in the back. Now, they got Andres Correa.
They also
who's
got
still young.
Tyrone Mears.
And they got Tyrone Mears. What's Tyrone Mears going to be in MLS, though?
I think
is he another Jimmy Traore?
I think they're hoping that he's a solid but not star right back.
I think they're hoping that he's more than a Jimmy Traore. I mean, no offense to Jimmy Traore other than that CCL goal that was an absolute bomb. He wasn't exactly a shining success,
no.
I would say.
And I don't think he goes down as a big loss, but I agree.
But that's what I mean. Tyrone Mears, is he going to be that kind of player?
Right.
Yeah.
Is he going to be that upgrade? And here's really the biggest issue with them, Ozzie Alonso. So important, and to miss him for a long period of time, and you know, you just don't know if that midfield can stay healthy, especially in central midfield. You just don't know.
I've been saying that I would take Andy Rose over Gonzalo Pineda, the current Gonzalo Pineda, who doesn't really cover enough ground.
Good. I'm glad you keep saying that.
I will keep saying
that. I like
when you keep
being wrong.
You're a big Pineda guy. Who's your team here?
I have two, DC and Houston. I think Houston got Kubo, but besides that, you could say they got Joel Willis to replace Tally Hall. Nothing else for me stands out, and I don't know.
Yeah, but Tyler Derrick is probably the starter. It'll be a competition there.
But I don't know if just getting Kubo for half a year makes you a much better team. And,
you're discounting Leonel Miranda and Raul Rodriguez. Like you don't, I think that's a Tyrone Mears situation where you don't know what you're getting out of them. But I think they have the potential to be big signings.
Okay, and then the other one is DC. I think DC, they stood pat from last year, but I don't think that that's enough because I think they surprised some people. We know how long Espíndola is suspended for. We don't know what the deal is with Eddie Johnson, and so with them, unless the younger guys, quote unquote, like Pontius and DeLeon and
Connor
Kitchen,
Doyle.
Yeah. Play better. I don't know how they get better as a team.
What do we think of Michael Farfán? Because we haven't really talked about that on this show. He came back, didn't work out for him at Cruz Azul. He's coming into that midfield. He was kind of pegged as the creative-minded midfielder when he's in Philly, but he didn't necessarily have the production to back that up. And I guess for me, it's my feeling he's more of a box-to-box guy. Where does he play on this team? Is he able to push himself into the lineup? Because Marcus Halstead is going to be there as well.
I think he's a guy who, kind of like Luis Silva, is behind the forward.
Or maybe even a De Leon type. Maybe you can play him wide.
You can play him wide. I don't like him there. Okay. He has played wide with the Philadelphia Union when he was with them. I think, but I mean, you look at them. Farfán was a phenomenal acquisition. Arrieta, I really think highly of him. He's one of those Espíndola types who, look, Espíndola joins DC, has an unbelievable season, an MVP. You know, we're
Espíndola
talking about
has had better MLS seasons every year of his career than Jairo Arrieta ever has at RSL and at New York.
But Jairo Arrieta hasn't moved as much as Espíndola. So I think he comes here. I think he totally has a chance to have a breakout.
There's
here.
No doubt that I think he's a stopgap solution for them. Ultimately, if they're healthy and their guys are not suspended, Arrieta should not be starting.
No.
But there has DC, there has to be a little bit of concern because they did overachieve last year. At least that's the way I see it. Maybe DC fans disagree. I'm sure Ben Olsen disagrees.
And I think the one guy we didn't mention, Miguel Aguilar, who's a draft pick who everyone loves, scored a big goal.
He's been the sensation of the preseason, really.
Absolutely. And he's
Chris Rolfe had a great one, too. So if he's not hurt at the end of the season last year, maybe they do something more. Let's move on real quick. We didn't talk about Sporting Kansas City. But of course, Roger Espinoza coming into the 2013 champs. They are now in the Western Conference, and he's going to be a big part of their team this year. We're excited to have him. Let's see what he has to say. Roger, what's up, man?
Good. Thank you for having me on the show.
We are glad to have you. Now, let's start with something a little bit lighter, and that is I'm going to call it a celebrity wedding that went down, and that was Dom Dwyer and Sidney LaRue. I mean, these two, obviously, the first American soccer couple. I want to know what you got them, though. I want to know what Roger Espinoza's wedding gift was, or if you've gotten one yet.
I haven't. I didn't even know he got married. It was just a surprise to everyone, right?
Yeah.
We're planning on that. It's kind of hard, you know, to find a gift for Dom. It looks like he has it all, but we'll try and find something.
What? Let me get your quick ideas. I doubt Dom's going to listen to this, so it's still going to be a surprise. What? Tongue in cheek, legitimate. What are you getting him?
I don't know. I haven't really thought about it. But I'm sure if we do something, we'll try to do it as a team and figure it out. I don't know. Maybe his gift can be a prank or something, since he's always pranking everyone.
So did he walk in, though, Roger, with the ring on? Was he showing off the ring to everyone? Like, how did it go down?
Well, he wasn't at first until everything came all out, and then he just started showing his ring to everyone how nice he looked, and nobody's going to be like his, and you know how the typical Dom.
So very flashy. You're back in Kansas City. You spent some time in Manchester and obviously Wigan. I think you lived in Manchester, but when I get back to Kansas City, the first thing I do is I go to Oklahoma Joe's. When you got back to Kansas City after this stint over there, what was the first thing that you did? What was the first place that you went?
You know, I remember getting up early in the morning because it was my signing day in Kansas City, and there's a coffee place I always go since I was a rookie, and it's called Broadway Coffee off of Broadway in Westport, and that was the first thing I did in the morning. So that's one of my favorite places to go in Kansas City every morning. So that's what I did, actually.
I definitely have been to Broadway Coffee before, Simon Borg rolling his eyes at me. Let's take it back, though. Let's take it back to Wigan, and obviously you spent a couple years there with you. But before you did that, you played in the Olympics in England, and that kind of pushed your move through. That really got you on the radar. I'm curious. You get to England, you win an FA Cup. But before that, you got that standing ovation in Newcastle. Which was the better moment? Which was the moment that was more gave you the most tingles, shall we say?
Just playing the quarterfinals in the Olympics, you know. Just playing against Brazil and just been able to make it past the group. something Honduras has never done, and being able to play against Brazil, because I really didn't know the standing ovation was for me, to be honest. I didn't know there was some boos in the crowd too, and I didn't know if it was exactly for me or for the referee. So it was a mixed emotion there. So I had no idea until after I found out. So I would say just being and going past the group, something that, you know, for a small country like Honduras, it's historical. We have never gone past that, and we haven't even been to many Olympics. So I think just being there and playing the quarterfinals against a team with a bunch of stars in Brazil, I think it was just one of the best experiences I ever had.
And, Roger, I assume after playing on that stage and playing that well, your phone must have been ringing off the hook. Tell me the call you got from the club that surprised you the most. Which club called you and you're like, what? They're calling me?
I mean, to be honest, I had a few teams, no big teams to any surprise. Obviously, they called my agent. He didn't let me know much of stuff, how, you know, this, they deal with a lot of stuff. I was playing here in Kansas City, so I'm sure they want to get many things in my head. And he just put Wigan and a couple clubs in the Premier League that I could go to. And I just had to go with Wigan just because Roberto Martinez and the style he played.
Now, at Wigan, they in England, they appreciate players who play your type of style. I mean, you saw it in that standing ovation in Newcastle. I'm sure the Wigan fans took a liking to you, and they had some chant for you. Did they not? Was there a chant for Roger Espinoza?
There is for every player. I really can't remember mine, but there is for every player. But, yeah, they did.
Well, there you have it, man. They're going to be disappointed if they're listening that you didn't remember that, Roger. That's
or that you didn't sing it.
Yeah,
I mean, you're in the game, you know. You're in the game and you're focused in the game, so it's kind of hard to hear the crowd. You just kind of hear your name here and there, but it's kind of hard.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that, what with not being on the field with people screaming my name. But let's take it back to Roberto Martinez. He's the one who obviously brought you over, and then you win the FA Cup, but then he departs for Everton. How did that change your situation over there? Because if you look, you know, between Kansas City and Wigan, and Kansas City, man, you were a starter. You were in the lineup. It seemed to be a little more difficult to really lock in a spot on the field with Wigan.
Yeah, I think the toughest moment, as we all know, is when Roberto left and new coaches came in. It was a whole different style than what you know, Roberto was not that much different from Kansas City in terms of trying to keep the ball and the pressure and being a box-to-box midfielder. So I got a lot of opportunity when I first got there. And as soon as he left, it became very difficult for me. Coaches changed, different style, new players came in. And then another coaching change right away a few months later, and that just slowed down for everyone. Other players came in, so to be honest, you know, it was just, I wasn't the only player. It was just a bunch of players. You know, that season, we had 63 games, and just a few players got lucky to play more than half of the games just because of all the coaching change in the past year and a half. It was four coaches, so that just made it difficult for me and for everybody else at the club.
Obviously tough there, and tough as well because Wigan has gone through a few relegation battles, obviously going down to the championship, and now they're fighting to stay there as well. You left at the end of 2014, so they've continued on. I'm wondering, though, what's the most difficult thing about being in the middle of that relegation battle? You know, here in the U.S., we don't have that side of things. What's the thing that maybe surprised you about being in that situation?
I mean, it's nerve-wracking just because you always want to play at the best level you can. Everybody is fighting for their lives to stay up. The pressure between the crowd and the pressure from the coach and the ownership and all the club directors is tough. But at the end of the day, you know, that's what you play for. You want to be in situations like that. You want to show everyone that you can play. And it's difficult. Difficult moments, but you signed up for that, and you know that's how the game goes. And you honestly grow up as a player and as a person. You gain tons of experience, and sometimes you just, you know, the game goes the way it goes.
Roger, one of your teammates at Wigan, Sean Maloney, now an MLS player with Chicago Fire. If there's a an MLS player out there that you can compare him to, who would it be, and what kind of impact do you think he's going to have? Compare him to a player for us.
You know, here in the league, I could compare it to Papa, or let's see. He's like a number. He plays like a number 10 role. You know, he's a guy who you can always go and give the ball, and he'll have an idea of what to do next. He's that type of player that already sees the game very, very well. You know, to Chicago, that's a great signing. He's a great player and a great person too. And I think he's gonna help them a lot. You know, before coming to MLS, he was telling me early in the year how he always wanted to come play here and that he was going to make a push for it. And there he is. He wanted to be here in the league. He loves America. He loves the culture here. And I think that that's great for the league, and that's great for him too, you know, because that's going to help him get into the league, and he's going to help the league grow up too. So it made me happy when I heard he wanted to be in the league. He's here now, and he's going to do well.
Should just be one matchup with him this year. That's unfortunate. You guys are moving over to the Western Conference. Kansas City is, and obviously you're back. I read an interview that you said it was Kansas City or nothing. You had interest in Italy. You had some other championship clubs, some places you could have gone, but you said you had to be back in Kansas City. Why is that? What really drew you back?
You know, I always wanted to play in the Premier League, and that's been my dream just because I watched when I was little. Here in the U.S., the Premier League is a big influence. That's the league that is shown most on TV. So everybody grows into the league, and I want to play in the Premier League. And I went there to Wigan because I knew the coach, but I did not want to leave Kansas City. I love the team. I love everything, but I needed to make that jump and see how it is in Europe. And when I got the screens there and got to see what it was all about and got the opportunity to play in the Premier League, a dream come true for me. And all that was done after that. I had to think about what was my next step going to be. I only had a year left at Wigan. It was either re-sign at Wigan for a year or a couple of years or look for other teams. And I don't like going jumping from team to team. I'm not that type of player. I wanted just to be somewhere that I know the style and you know, and being a winning team. And my only option was, you know, that I wanted to come, it was Kansas City, because I didn't want to go to be traveling all over the place and end up at these places where you don't know what's going to happen. And I always remember great times in Kansas City and decided to call Peter and set the whole thing up.
Now, Roger, as you mentioned, you were part of Kansas City before. You helped create the identity that defines Sporting Kansas City still to this day. And I'm curious, from the time you left till now that you're back, how has Peter Vermees specifically and the club changed from when you left him?
Oh, yeah, it has changed a lot. You know, obviously, there's the players that I started with like Beasley, Chan, Zeus, Paulo Nagamura came around that time. And some other players, you know, they're older. They played in bigger games. Zeus and Bees played in the World Cup, so they have tons of experience. Chance and all them together won an MLS Cup. Peter, obviously, he doesn't need to go. When we were younger, he repeatedly had to repeat things and the style of play, and I don't think he has to do that anymore. I think all the players that are here now know what he wants. It's our job now as the older players to get the younger players into the whole tactics and the whole aspects of the game. So all that has changed. Everything is different. Peter doesn't have to do all those things anymore because we already know that. The club, we know the club, the new stadium and the marketing department, all the media, everybody in the MLS knows that it's one of the top in the league. And all that, it's evolving every year. And that's great. You know, that's great for the league, for the town, and for the players.
of course, you're one of those players, and Simon mentioned it, you really thrived in this system, in that kind of that midfield role where you're putting a lot of pressure on guys, you're running a lot, and then that left foot, getting the ball and switching and pushing the ball forward. What is it about that system that allows you to be so successful? What of your attributes really kind of shine and come out, and what should we expect to see from you in 2015?
You know, Peter, when he decided to put me at that position, he made it very clear what he wanted me to do. And that's exactly what I was, I grew up playing. You know, I'm the type of player who likes to play offensive and defensive. I like to be on both sides. I like to be part of the game and both sides, just because it's fun. To me, that's fun. You know, being able to help the defense and help the attack. I think over the years, I've learned, I've gotten a lot of experience from games I've played, big games. I think I've learned when to go and when not to go. I think when I was younger, I always went, and sometimes it might not have been the best decision. You know, obviously, when I was younger, I was a lot more aggressive than I am now. And that got me in a lot of trouble at times. I think I've learned a little bit. We'll see this year. I learned a little bit, you know, to stay calm and, you know, where to position myself and where to communicate with my teammates. I think back then I didn't have that. You know, I didn't have the power to tell older players where did I vision stuff on the field. Now I feel like I've gotten that power just from the experience of games I played, and you know, now I'm 8 years into my professional career, and I've learned many things, and I think I can help the team on that, and hopefully on 2015 I can do that for my team and do better and win the MLS Cup.
You mentioned that those early days, Roger, and I was in Kansas City watching them. I remember you got a reputation, man. People were calling you Red Card Roger, and I always felt like maybe that was a little bit unfair. Were you ever like, how did I get stuck with this name? Or was that something that, you know, I asked a couple people around the office and they said, that's not that bad. That just means, you know, it's kind of cool. What did you think of that?
Yeah, you know, I don't mean to be any, trying to be a dirty player or anything. I was just trying to win for my team and win 100% on every play. That's the way Peter wanted us to play. That's why Kansas City drafted me, and Peter let me know right away. We drafted you because of this reason. So why change? Peter knows that I wasn't trying to be an aggressive player, trying to hurt anybody. He knew the game. Everybody in Kansas City knew that. Yes, at times you can go into plays that you don't want to hurt anybody, but you just go into a play, it's a 50-50 challenge. Sometimes it happens. People have done it to me. They got red cards too. I've done it, and sometimes you just move on and try to do better next time. And, you know, I'm glad Peter knew that side of on my game, and he was happy with it, and he was fine with it. And he just kept pushing me forward, and, you know, he's one of the main reasons why I'm still a professional, and I was able to go to Europe and be able to play in other games with my national team. And, you know, I'm going to keep doing the same thing, just be a little smart about it.
Speaking of the national team, Roger, I assume your 2015, you expect to still be part of that group. But I noticed Jorge Luis Pinto, his first camps, the new coach for Honduras, he didn't call you up. You weren't called up. What was behind that, and have you had conversations with Pinto?
No, I have not, actually. Obviously, it's kind of hard. We're in preseason here. I just got to Kansas City, so it's very important for me to have preseason with the team. I'm not too worried about it. To be honest, I know when I start playing here in Kansas City, I'll do my best to do well and for the team to do well. And I think I'll get a call up to the national team. You know, there's great players in Honduras that could get the job done. And I'll just keep working hard. And I've not gotten the opportunity to speak to him or to anybody in Honduras. But if I get the chance, I'll be ready.
There you have it. Roger Espinoza, he's going to get that chance in Kansas City. This year, they're hoping to get to the top of the Western Conference, of course, looking for another call-up to Honduras. Two World Cups, man, that's crazy. I can't believe that from the times when I first started covering you. It's pretty incredible. But congratulations on your move back, and good luck this year.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Roger.
Thanks, Roger.
Big thanks to Roger Espinoza there. Enjoying his time in Arizona. KC's down there training in preseason. Matt Beasley down there as well. And a little bit strange. Look, Fitnessgate, that went on and on and on. I know you're rolling your eyes out there saying, why are we talking about it again? But Matt Beasley came out and clarified his comments. And here's kind of the gist of it. He said, it's frustrating that any of my comments would be taken to imply that my commitment to the national team is anything but absolute. And this kind of puzzled me, guys, because I didn't think anybody was questioning Matt Beasley's commitment to the national team, his fitness. I didn't think that was an issue. And U.S. Soccer has since come out and said Matt Beasley's fitness was indeed not an issue.
And he played 90 minutes in both games during camp.
I guess I don't understand why he had to come out and clarify here.
I mean, maybe he goes home after that story runs about Peter Vermees' comments, and on the same day that Peter Vermees spoke,
Matt Beasley
spoke as well, and his comment there maybe could have been misinterpreted depending on how you read it and who is reading it. He says, that's when my season starts. It goes from March to December. If the expectation is different, that's something that needs to be discussed so we know going into a camp where we need to be.
And
those were Beasley's words.
Right, and we talked about on the last show, Jurgen Klinsmann tweeting like, yeah, it's about 100%. You got to be 100% every single time to clarify. A lot of clarifications of comments here coming on this whole fitness issue.
Well, isn't that part of the fact that they're communicating through other people? Everyone in this conversation is communicating through the media. The media is reporting it not just the way they choose, but that's not the easiest way to communicate. If they were communicating by themselves in a locker room face-to-face, I don't think there'd have to be as many clarifications.
It's interesting that Klinsmann does choose to speak to players through the media. Mm-hmm. And he's clearly doing it. I'm assuming he speaks to the players as well, but he clearly uses the media to send messages like this one.
And maybe if you send a message publicly out there without naming anyone,
you're putting the players in a bad spot.
Every player thinks it may be about them. So Beasley says something, and it turns out it's not about him. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't know that when it comes out.
And he's being asked by the media. The media don't know it's not about him, so they're asking him anyway.
And there were other people that were saying that. So, Beasley, I wasn't sure what that was about. Let us know what you think at Extra Time Radio, extratime@MLSsoccer.com. When we come back, the World Cup moving to November and December. What does that mean for MLS?
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey guys, this is Omar Gonzalez from the LA Galaxy, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys, David Goss, Simon Borg. I am Andrew Wiebe. Into segment two here. We'll get to this World Cup debate in just a second, but first,
wait, before we get into anything, can I get a little bit of credit? Because I picked this song and Simon bit his lip and was like moving his head a little.
I was just trying to knock something out, maybe I'm just
enjoying a pain from biting his lip. Who knows? I don't know.
I never got into Elvis Presley, man.
You weren't really in like the prime Elvis Presley era.
So here's the thing. I like Elvis, but not crazy. I went to Memphis, which I had a blast in, and we went there, and someone told us we had to go to Graceland, which wasn't something we were going to do, and we went, and it was awesome, and we drove back to St. Louis, which is like a 6-hour drive. Yep. And in the car that we rented, they had Sirius Radio, Sirius XM FC Channel 94.
Boom.
And there was an Elvis station, and we listened to it for 6 hours.
So I listened to so many things and consumed so much there. And in this day and age with social, you don't know where you get stuff. But I have a clear an impression that Elvis Presley died because poop.
No, he was
hold on, built up inside him and he couldn't get it out.
No, he was sitting on the toilet.
Right,
he died
on the toilet. He might have been constipated. I'm not sure, but
literally, he got big because that was all poop.
Oh wow. We'll have to do some research and confirm. I don't think now's the time.
That feels false.
Really?
Hey, look, some actual MLS news here. Las Vegas out of the running for that 24th MLS expansion.
Nice transition, brother.
Yeah, I know. Look, he probably performed in Vegas. He might have been able to take a poop there.
Definitely performed in Vegas.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Look, come on. So it's Sacramento, Minnesota, and then Miami, of course, is kind of locked into that 23rd spot. They've got to get their stadium situation together. But here is what Commissioner Don Garber wrote to Las Vegas Mayor Carolyn.
Commissioner Don Garber.
That's right. We'll have that later in the mailbag. Mayor Carolyn Goodman, given the timing of our expansion rollout and the uncertainty as to when we might be able to move forward in Las Vegas, we are no longer considering Las Vegas as an expansion market until after 2018. So it's still alive, perhaps, down the line. Is this a big blow? Are you sad, Simon? You don't seem like a Vegas guy to me.
Why? I love Showtime. I love performing.
Oh, okay.
I love what Vegas represents. But what I think it's the fact that MLS has said to Vegas, let's revisit this.
Right.
That's, to me, number one, a positive message that I take away. Okay, you didn't make expansion. Now. Two, as a North America, as a continent, I look at that and say, wait a minute. We're revisiting something in 2018?
Right.
What does that mean?
What happens? Yeah. What comes then? Because the whole thing is 24 by 2020.
What does that mean?
But maybe you start pushing it on later on. I mean, I think Las Vegas could be great. I think it could support a team.
What would be great to see is if they took the Sacramento-Orlando model and they continue to push it forward and build a fan base so that they could put the proposal out there and say, look, we already exist.
We've got something going. And on that note, USL, not USL Pro, remember, USL, they've done their rebrand here. Their commissioner, Tim Holt, was talking to ASN the other day, and he said that they're going to go for 30-plus to 40 teams in USL by 2020.
By the end of the decade, yeah.
So you're looking at a huge expansion there. It's 24 this year, and that was with a big growth of MLS teams and standalone teams.
Didn't Vegas have the Las Vegas Mobsters?
That was PDL, I believe.
Oh, it's PDL.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they would need to create something. The thing is, Vegas is such an event town.
Yeah.
Is Vegas one of those cities that's going to go for minor league soccer?
Well, there's a difference in Vegas between visiting Vegas and living in Vegas. And I have some friends that live there, and they love having the Strip as an option, but they don't spend very much time, if any time at all, there. They like being able to do those things, but you still have a large group of people. They're just trying to live. They're just trying to do fun stuff. And you know what? Look, if it's affordable affordable thing for kids, or, you know, on a Friday night, you can go out there. I can't judge it. Maybe we have some folks in Vegas that can tell us more. Could USL work there?
And we've gotten emails from people, but it's similar to Orlando, that Orlando has this tourist attraction, but the team is there for the people that live there. Orlando City is not Disney. Orlando City is there to be a part of the city, and that would be similar to Vegas. It's there for the people who live in Vegas and live around Vegas.
When I say about, when I talk about Las Vegas in that way, I'm thinking New York City, where New York City is in a similar fashion. I mean, we're not, New Yorkers aren't going to Times Square and the Empire State. We're not doing touristy things, mm-hmm. but you still want the big attraction, you know? Mm-hmm.
It still takes a lot to get your attention.
But you start a new team, and if you start successful and you have a new stadium, you have people drawn in. And if you can make it a good environment and a good product to watch, a quality product to watch, you can keep fans around while you're pushing for MLS.
No doubt. I don't know if Vegas and Qatar have similar, like, arid environments. I think the Qatar is going to be pretty miserable in the summer of 2022. Well, it's not going to happen in the summer of 2022, the World Cup. It's been moved to November and December of that year. According to reports, they're looking pretty good, though. Grant Wall, one of the ones out there reporting this from sources. And my immediate thought on that was November and December, huh? That's a pretty important time for the league that I follow, that I pay attention to. And by 2022... MLS, according to their goals, is going to be one of the best teams in the world. Of course, we have to wait and
leagues.
See. That's what I meant to say, leagues in the world. We'll have to wait and see how that goes. But what do you do? How do you react if you're MLS and you see this? Does that make you get a little bit nervous? You're like, what about our playoffs? That's our zone.
That's a one-off. I mean, all leagues are going to be inconvenienced to some respect, no?
Sure,
I mean,
sure.
The leagues that have... Their season going at the time, the European season, they're going to have to jump through hoops a little bit. So to me, I think MLS will find a creative way and still make the...
Put your commissioner's hat on.
Yeah.
How do you do it? You push the season up and you probably shorten it. And whatever it is you do, you unfortunately for that year lose some regular season games, I think. Now, we don't know what the league will look like at the time in terms of teams and how big it'll be. And
here's the other question for you. Generally, those camps get together, 6 weeks before the tournament starts? So now you're looking at, like, October's gone, half of September's gone, at least for your World Cup players.
Well, if you say, let's say October 1st, your World Cup players have to be there, because it says November, December. A World Cup takes a month. So let's say it starts in the middle of November and runs through the middle of December. So October 1st, you have to get your players out of there. But if you think about it, almost everyone would be done if you're in playoffs, because at the semifinals, there's only four teams left. Mm-hmm. So you're at a point where a lot of guys can be released. So you try and find a way to – I think you just try and get the final in right before everyone would have to be released.
Yeah, it's a tough situation. I mean, this was the first thing I thought about when I looked at that, and I'm sure that MLS is looking at that, looking at these reports, probably looking at them years ago, saying, okay, how would we maybe go and address this? But let us know what you think. What are your ideas? How would they do it? What's the best way to do it? Would you shorten the season? Would
and
you
whatever you do, please don't come up with, we'll go to the European season model. Please stop.
We've been hearing about that a lot today, haven't we? And it's cold. It's like every single February, people figure out that it's cold in most of the U.S.
And they get on
Twitter and they're like, oh, look at this. This could never work. I'm like, I thought we did that the last 5 years. We all know it's cold. Either way.
Here's the question about the World Cup. Would you watch a 48-team World Cup taking place in two separate countries with a final group stage in a third hosting country?
That was that Luis Figo's idea?
Yeah, he came out with his manifesto at Wembley Stadium this week for his run for presidency. He's trying to beat out, of course, Sepp Blatter, along with two others who are contending for it. And interestingly enough, they're all using the same PR group in England to run their campaign. So people think maybe...
That's ridiculous.
No surprise it's an English PR group. Not a lot of love for Mr. Blatter.
No, right? Like Luis Figo gave his speech at Wembley. Right. No surprise there.
Like, oh yeah, and Wembley's open for you. Just come on in. No big deal.
But the question is, because people are saying you can't open it up to 48 teams because you get rid of the tradition and the way it's been. The World Cup has consistently expanded, right? In 1994 was the first time you had 32 teams. So it's not like that's a tried and true style that it's been done. And you've gone from group stage to group stage to now group stage to knockout, right?
But like if to go to 48, that would mean like, let's take CONCACAF for example. That it would be such a formality qualifying that it would really take something out of qualifying
it would.
From a fan
and that's,
standpoint.
That's a good point. Qualifying, in many ways, is more exciting than the tournament. You know, it's about accomplishing the dream, and that's really where you get kind of those minnows. I mean, we found that on this show with the 31-0. It's not just about the 32 teams, and part of it is the heartbreak. If there's not that heartbreak, there's not that drama that just kind of seeps through every game.
And what everyone listening would say, or what a lot of people are saying, is look at Euros. It expanded, and this qualifying round has been the most exciting that they've had for a long time. Now, I don't know if that will stay sustained. It may just be because, well, you know, Scotland's going for their first one in forever, and you know, Iceland's leading their group, and Israel's close to qualifying. And after the first time of everyone getting in, maybe it's no longer exciting. But qualifying becomes, can Jamaica and Panama get in? And it's no longer a conversation about the U.S. and Mexico, but that's still a competition.
But maybe
there.
It's better for Jamaica and Panama. Either way, you can see what Luis Figo might be doing here. Expanded tournament means more revenue for a lot of countries, more opportunities for a lot of countries, maybe more voting blocks for a guy like Luis Figo. So let us know what you think about all that. One final thing before we get out of here. Real quick, Tim Howard kind of alluded to on one of our sister shows here, Counterattack on SiriusXM FC, that he, unless he leaves Everton before his contract is up, he won't come back to MLS. Does that disappoint us? Do we want to see Tim Howard at MLS?
I mean, not at that age and not with that prospect. Like, if he's going to come, I would want him to come now. So if he's going to really see out his contract, which...
He'd be 38.
I mean, just having a 38-year-old goalkeeper for the sake of it, look.
I mean, Casey Keller had a good year or two when he came back to Seattle. Did.
But it was, you sensed it was more of a formality at that point. And I just don't like the smell of that one, you know?
Yeah, I would agree with Simon.
Look, I think there's a lot of people to be very happy to see him back, but the way he puts it here, probably going to move on to his broadcasting opportunities and a lot of other stuff. A lot of things on the horizon for Tim Howard. That's it for this segment. We come back, the mailbag. We've got some opinions on who our friend should take to that U.S.-Mexico game.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hi, this is Mix the Screwed, and welcome to Extra Time Radio.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys Simon Borg, David Goss. I am Andrew Wiebe. Big news here on this Thursday. MLS Fantasy is out as of February 19th. You can go to fantasy.mlssoccer.com and do all of that. Extra Time Radio has a league, and we tweeted that out. Actually, I did. I'll make sure, Dave, that you go in and retweet from the ETR account. That's a head-to-head league, and it is unlimited. There is no limit to how many people can get in that thing. And yes, you may be able to hear that right now. Our clanky heater behind us is just going crazy.
I don't know if it was because Simon had his hand going. He may have just been playing it.
He may have been playing it. So get into fantasy. Get that going. We'll really pump it up over the next couple weeks, and we'll try to keep you updated as to who's doing well.
But we don't know what the prize is.
No,
they
don't.
Have to tell us what do the fans want. Of course, we all know, and we've discussed
soccer,
it again this
soccer,
week.
Soccer shorts.
That we'll know that 50 Shades of Grey signed by Simon and his mother-in-law.
I think just Simon this time. Maybe the DVD. By the time this is over, I bet it'll be out on DVD. So maybe it's like a private screening with Simon.
Maybe.
Oh, no way.
But quite honestly,
oh,
I like that. We want to know what do you guys want.
Yep.
So we can go out and try and get it. We have all season. Just let us know because it's your league, and we're going to try and keep it up to date throughout the season.
Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. And with that, we're turning it over once again to Mr. Goss here. Guide us through the mailbag, my man.
So we got a few quality emails about U.S. Soccer Mount Rushmore. Chris in D.C., and he said, it's just way too soon. It's crazy that people are even talking about it. He said he hopes Donovan makes it on the soccer mushmore is what he calls it. But he also hopes that a lot of the people who end up on there haven't even been born yet and that eventually we'll win a World Cup. And then he says, although P.S., I hope they actually are born because he would like to see.
You know what else is crazy? Us actually acting like this thing is real and is going to be carved into some mountain somewhere. That's also crazy, but it's fun.
And don't give me that the waiting for the Mount Rushmore is a good email, because the game is now, today. I don't care what happens in the future.
Well, John P. O'Donnell Jr. agrees with you, so you'll already agree back with him.
What a name, by the way. That's like a name for civic service.
And he says Don Garber should definitely be on it. Simon is dead on when he states the body of work is better than the nice moment, much like a Hall of Fame when you judge someone on their career and their impact on the sport. Don Garber took a league, saved it from joining the pile of extinct soccer leagues. He said with the majority of the growth of soccer-specific stadiums, academies, intro of the DP rule, getting MLS the largest TV contract for any domestic soccer league, and more on that he's definitely
And he also said that LD and Arena pretty much have Garber to thank because he put this league where it needed to be. I've come around. Simon's argument didn't get me, but John P. O'Donnell Jr., you've sucked me in. So
I disagree, though, with the Bruce Arena Landon Donovan comment there. Because what Bruce did with the 0-2 World Cup team and that bump that it gave, the legitimacy that it gave to U.S. soccer and to MLS, I think is separate of Don Garber. Because he won MLS Cup before Don Garber was part of the league, and then he did what he did in the World Cup.
You know what would be interesting if we're playing the what would have happened if? If, let's say, Donovan never came to MLS when he did. How do you think that Donovan story would have gone?
Yeah, I don't know. I think at some point he breaks through in Germany.
You think he would have stayed there?
Leverkusen or elsewhere. Either it's in Germany or he moves to probably England, just because you have that little bit of comfort with the language.
The question is, if he doesn't make it on a Champions League.
Maybe Mexico.
If he didn't make it on a Champions League team, is he the face of U.S. soccer? Or is he like DeMarcus Beasley and Carlos Bocanegra, who are great players that people look at but aren't that one Michael Jordan type guy?
Yeah, I don't know. It didn't take the Champions League for him. He's all about international and all about the MLS accomplishments, and that's plenty for me to get him on.
And
not Rushmore.
John O'Donnell finishes, P.S. Simon, you take the friend who can afford it because...
Can't afford it.
Who can't afford it to the USA-Mexico game. Your in-laws will realize you're doing something nice for a friend as well.
And we put this on the poll.
Because it comes back to last show.
Yeah, we put this on the poll. Of course, you'll remember our friend had those US-Mexico tickets. He didn't know who to take. Huge soccer friend who couldn't go. Well, that got the most votes, 56%. Then it's his wife, even though she said to take someone else. Domestic intelligence there. That one got 28% of the vote. The Mexican co-worker and friend who loves soccer, 10% of the vote. And in dead last, it's the brother-in-law. Only 6% of the vote.
We got an email from Tristan in Seattle who says bring him to a local game. So if you live in San Antonio or Dallas, take him to a Scorpions game or an FC Dallas game, you can get your brother-in-law involved without
taking him
to the USA
game. Get him started,
game.
But that experience means so much more.
You cannot bring up that you went to that game in front of at Thanksgiving or at Christmas. You just can't.
Yeah, probably.
But why is it assumed that you have to take like you're saying, oh, hey, I got these tickets, and then they would be like,
the
well,
question,
I want to
The
go.
Question here is, has he broached the topic with said brother-in-law? If he hasn't broached that topic, or if his wife wasn't like, hey, you know what, I gave him some tickets and you should go, like, then you're good. If you haven't brought
if
it up,
know
I think you're good.
If you know that he would go, if you know the brother-in-law would go, and he's in town.
Yeah, but a lot of people would go.
And then
everybody
later you
would
you bring it up and he goes, well, I would have gone. And then all you have to say is, now I know for next time.
Boom.
That's all you got to say.
Slime ball.
Slime ball? Simon, that's just the Maltese way of doing things.
Sure. Sure it is.
Simon, we got an email about a couple of Maltese treats. BuzzFeed put out an article, the top 25 things about Maltese. What's your favorite Maltese treat? What's the one thing if someone says, I want to taste the delicacy of Maltese cuisine?
I was looking through this, and it's
pasti, the pastizzi.
Yeah, we've talked about pastizzi. Right. So what's number
two? The other
two
one is the dates that I've only seen in Malta. I haven't seen anymore. What are their names? I don't know their names in Maltese, but they're date-filled, fried, deep-fried delicacies. But
not fincata?
No. But the other one is Obite. Did Obite make it? Really hard candy?
No,
blocks of
it
hard
did
candy?
Not. Mm-mm. Twisties did. A delicious, crisp, savory snack.
Rabbits also made it. Just
Twisties
straight
are
up
like
rabbits.
Cheetos.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Rabbits? No, rabbits excellent. That is. Are these numbered?
Is that the national dish of Malta, the national meat of Malta? Because I can't imagine you're raising lots of large livestock on a small island.
It's not the national meat, but it is the finest delicacy.
Ah.
The finest delicacy in Malta. Well, lots to talk about on this show, but we got to get out of here now. Let us know what you thought of Roger Espinoza. What is MLS going to do in 2022? I'm sure some folks out there have ideas. You know how to get at us until Monday. I won't be here, actually. I'll be in Charleston, so it'll just be these two jokers. Enjoy their company. We be out.